So I think we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
So, before starting, I've been asked to remind everyone, maybe it's not a reminder, but just to announce that in the foyer there's a CD called Divine Classics, compact disc, for sale. It's just on the right as you go out. And it's for all of those of you who have CD players, something that I want to recommend. It was a compilation. It's an anthology of different songs that devotees around the world have sung to different types of music, some very traditional, some mixed East and West, some just Western. But it's an anthology of very high quality recordings. So I'd like to encourage all of you who have a CD player to get one of these on the way out. Just on your right, it's called Divine Classics. There's a big, beautiful picture of Krishna on the cover, just his face. It's the picture of the deity in Dallas, Texas, called Kalachanji. So if you like good music playing in your house, this is something you can listen to over and over again. You won't get tired of it. It's very beautiful. So I want to recommend it. It's called Divine Classics. Tomorrow, we're officially celebrating the appearance day of Advaita Acharya. But today, tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about him and read some passages from Chaitanya Chaitamrita about Advaita Acharya. Lord Chaitanya, of course, appeared 500 years ago, and just prior to his appearance in 1486, Advaita Acharya appeared. He prayed to the Lord that there would be someone like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come, because at the time there was a great dearth of spiritual knowledge throughout the land. This was in India, in Bengal. The Vaishnava teaching had been taken over by speculators, you might say, or what we call sometimes smarter Brahmins. It was very difficult to ascertain the essence of what spiritual life was to be. So it somewhat parallels today's situation. You know, we have a kind of confused world. Some people are looking for Krishna, some people are looking for values in life, some people are just looking for answers. They don't know where or how they're going to get them or where to look. But there was a somewhat analogous situation going on in Bengal at this time, 500 years ago. So Advaita Acharya was the one who prayed for the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya came for many reasons. We worship Lord Chaitanya here in the temple every day because we know that he's very merciful. He's considered Mo Mahabharanaya, the most merciful incarnation of Krishna, because he gives the holy name. You don't have to do very difficult austerities or sacrifices, but we have to chant the holy name of Krishna. It's a very simple thing in one sense. So Lord Chaitanya came to give pure love of God, and he's sometimes likened to a gardener, someone who just plants the seeds for love of God, who just gives, not one that we have to become very purified to see, are very qualified to understand. Therefore, he's considered the most merciful incarnation of Krishna. So his appearance is very auspicious. And when he appeared along with four other associates, Lord Nityananda, Lord Advaita Acharya, Lord Gadadhar, and Sri Vas. These all have different roles to play. And in particular, Nityananda is considered to be the incarnation of Krishna. Gadadhar and Srivas Acharya, are considered to be devotee and an incarnation of Krishna, and Advaita Acharya is considered to be an incarnation. So he has a very auspicious name. His name, Advaita Acharya, is sometimes just identified with auspiciousness itself. It's very purifying just to hear the name of Advaita Acharya. So the words are also significant because they have meaning. Those of you who know the words will recognize that Advaita means non-dual. We get the word and Dvaita from Sanskrit. Dvaita means two, like we have words in English that are somewhat like that, like dual, Dvaita in other languages. Roman or Latin languages, words that start off like that, DV, DW, duo, two, duet, means two, and a is the Sanskrit affix, which means not. So not two means oneness. And this means that Advaitacharya is one with the Lord, or Mahavishnu, therefore he has the name Advaita. Now our philosophy is really a purified dualism. We believe that Krishna and living entities are qualitatively the same, but quantitatively we're very small and Krishna is very large. And we have a relationship with Krishna. This is non-dualism. This is dualism, and non-dualism is the thought that everything is the same, that we're all one. So even though this is his name, Advaita Acharya, he is a Vaishnava whose philosophy is that we have differences between ourselves and Krishna. But he's non-different from Mahavishnu, therefore he's given the name Advaita. And Acharya means one who teaches by example, that is, a teacher. So Advaita Acharya is the person who is the incarnation of Lord Mahavishnu, who teaches us by example. And it was his pleading that brought the Lord to us, brought Lord Chaitanya. There are many reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance, and one of them is that there was a call by Advaita Acharya in a very desperate situation, you might say, that Lord Chaitanya should come and enliven us. So Advaita Acharya has a whole chapter dedicated to him in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. It's in the Adi Lila, the fifth chapter. I'm going to read a couple of verses and we'll talk about them, what they mean, and what the significance of his appearance was. He was, among many other things, a caretaker of Haridas Thakur, who was the Acharya of the holy name. Haridas Thakur was born in a Mohammedan family and thought to be somewhat of an outcast, or he was thought himself to be an outcast and was in many respects not accepted by then Hindu society. Nevertheless, Advaita Acharya was very kind to him, and he said that just by giving him prasad or by caring for him, he was getting the same benefits he would get by feeding hundreds of thousands or millions of Brahmins, even though he was not Hindu by birth. So Advaita Acharya also manifested many aspects of mercy. I'm going to read a couple of verses from the sixth chapter of the Adi Lila of Chaitanya Chaitamrita. Chaitanya Chaitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is one of the key texts of the Krishna consciousness movement. Sometimes we call it the postgraduate text. We read Bhagavad Gita, we read Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we read Chaitanya Chaitamrita. So these are some of the texts about Advaita Acharya. One of the things is that he is very often referred to not only as an expansion, but as a limb of the Supreme Lord. And the difference between an expansion and a limb is that the limb is considered to be more connected or more vital, just like our own limbs are connected to our body, our arms and legs, very important. So his relationship with the Lord is very intimate. And he was a very intimate disciple. He wasn't exactly a disciple of Lord Chaitanya, but he considered himself a disciple. Lord Chaitanya considered Advaita Acharya to be his spiritual master, because Advaita was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri was the spiritual master of Ishvara Puri, who was a disciple of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya always looked to Advaita Acharya as his spiritual master and his guru. But Advaita Acharya always looked to Lord Chaitanya as his mentor, as his spiritual teacher. So they had a kind of interesting symbiotic relationship where they energized each other. One served the other, and each thought the other was his teacher or his guru. So he manifested many characteristics, and they used to chant characteristics of love, but they used to chant together sometimes for hours and hours, as was the practice of many of Lord Chaitanya's followers. They would chant in Srivas Sangam, the home of Srivas Acharya, and many others in the home of many different followers, pundits. And this chanting would sometimes go right on into the night, and they would become immersed in transcendental love with Krishna through this chanting. So again, it was Lord Chaitanya who taught that we don't have to do anything very difficult, but in this particular age, as is recommended in the Shastras throughout many different Upanishads and Puranas, that one can gain perfection just by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra with love and devotion, and one can experience what real love of God is. So to some verses. In the Adi Leela chapter 6, it is said, Lord Advaitacharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Sri Advaita, who is the reservoir of virtues, is the main limb of Mahavishnu. His full name is Advaita, for he is identical in all respects with that Lord. It is through him, Advaitacharya, that the Lord spread the Sankirtan movement, and through him that he delivered the world. So Lord Chaitanya is known for saying that I am but one person. He likened himself, he used the metaphor of a gardener, that I am planting seeds of love of Godhead, and I'm casting them about so that they can take root, and the fruits of love of Godhead can gradually appear. But I am only one gardener, and there must be millions and millions of gardeners. So it was the principle of Lord Chaitanya to empower other living beings. And it is interesting that we think of Krishna consciousness as spreading through many different temples. We have temples all over the world, 400 or 500 temples. But in Lord Chaitanya's time, and during the time of his work, of his expanding Krishna consciousness, he didn't actually start any temples. He didn't open any temples, not a single one. Rather, his way of spreading Krishna consciousness was to empower people. And when he traveled in South India, which is where most of his preaching was done, he convinced people by his purity and by the nature of his dedication to the Lord and to speaking about Krishna, that they could do the same thing. So even though there was a sense that many temples should be created, Lord Chaitanya decided to teach people about the importance of Krishna consciousness. And just by associating with him, just by seeing him, they became very powerful unto themselves. And they would form little groups, or sometimes they would just invite their friends and their family to their homes. And they would sit with them and they would chant, they would speak philosophy, they would share prasadam, have spiritual food together. And many people became convinced that this was the way to spiritual happiness, to solving all of their problems, the way to success and auspiciousness. And in this way, there was a kind of chain reaction set up by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Small groups of people would invite their friends, and they would become so enthused and so empowered that they would do the same thing. They would invite their friends and family to their homes. They, in turn, would become spiritually inspired. So there was a kind of spiritual chain reaction set in motion. And in this way, millions of people, literally millions of people, became devotees of Krishna. And they entered into pure devotional service. Now, many people practiced some form of devotion, some rituals. But there was, at this time, very little devotion to Krishna being exercised. Pure devotional service is a kind of service that is free from fruitive desires, free from karma, free from jnana, free from yoga. All of these are impurities. The jnanis, or those seeking knowledge, tend to be sidetracked from pure devotional service, to just gain knowledge for its own sake. Those who are interested or very entwined with wanting to be successful are also diverted from pure devotional service, because they want to enjoy the fruits of their actions. They want to get on the path of material progress, a better situation, more funds, or they want to get a better birth, they want to get more education, they want other material benefits. And yogis are after some sort of power, or sometimes we call them mystic siddhis, like trying to become very small or very powerful, or hold a breath, or have power over other people. This is one of the types of diversions that yogis get into. They want to become powerful. So these are diversions from pure devotional service. Lord Chaitanya, on the other hand, taught pure devotional service, that was free from all of these things. And the only reward in pure devotional service, which is not knowledge or power or wealth, was that the actual act of serving was its own reward. They say, even in English proverbs, that not the Bible proverbs, but in the aphorisms, that to give is better than to receive. So the idea is, in pure devotional service, that we just give. And that feels very wonderful, because there is always reciprocation. Lord Chaitanya was always reciprocating with his devotees, and we have the experience that whatever we give to Krishna, we are rewarded amply for. And he promises this in Bhagavad Gita, yayatam mampabhadyante tam sthitai bhavajamyaham, that whatever, to whatever degree one surrenders, one gets rewarded proportionately, actually even more. People are today looking for what they call providential investments. You know, if you invest $1,000 or $1 million in something, you're doing pretty well if you get 1 or 2% or 10 or 15 or 20% back over time. But the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that if you give to a spiritual cause, not just a good cause, but to a spiritual cause, and that's not just an investment, but it's a donation, then you get returned by unlimited multiplication. Not 5 or 10 or 20 or 30%, but by unlimited multiplication. Of course, giving to any good cause brings rewards. That's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam. You can get 4 times your investment back. But if you invest in pure devotional service, and it doesn't necessarily always mean resources in the form of money, it can mean your time, your energy, your words, your body, many different things, then you get return by unlimited multiplication. That is perfect reciprocation. This is what Lord Chaitanya and what Advaitacharya taught, that if you engage in pure devotional service and you become free from yoga, from karma, from jnana, from knowledge, from power, from wealth, as side issues, then you get unlimited return. So that return is the reward. There's no other reward for devotional service. And of course there are side effects, side benefits. You get peace of mind, you get happiness and all those things. But the ultimate goal is to get love of God. So this is what Lord Chaitanya and Advaitacharya were teaching. Verse 101 of the 6th chapter of Adi Lila, and verse 100. I'll read them. The position of being a devotee is higher than that of equality with Lord Krishna. For the devotees are dearer to Lord Krishna than his own self. And Prabhupada comments on that verse by saying, the concept of oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is inferior to that of eternal service to the Lord, because Lord Krishna is more affectionate to devotees than to his personal self. And then he quotes a verse, a famous verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 9th canto, which says, the devotees are my heart, and I am the heart of my devotees. My devotees do not know anyone but me. Similarly, I do not know anyone but my devotees. This is the intimate relationship between the Lord and his devotees. This is another proof, another way to understand that there is reciprocation, because this is the mood or the sentiment of the Lord, that I am the heart of the devotees and the devotees are my hearts. It's a very, what we might call, intimate or relationship of the heart. It's not just some devotion in a cold, unfeeling place with a cold, unfeeling, distant, unknown, faceless God. But it's a very real relationship, just as, you know, we're talking here, human being to human being. There's a relationship, and therefore we have very beautiful deities that are decorated, that are offered several times a day, many wonderful articles. So there's reciprocation. That's, without reciprocation there is no meaning to life, so to speak. Everyone is looking for the perfect relationship. Everyone is looking for approval, and everybody actually needs that kind of support, because without that, life is not worth living. Once Prabhupada was asked, what's the purpose of life? And he said, well, it's to enjoy. But how do we enjoy life? We only enjoy life through the company of others, or through other people, through their association. So text 101 says, the Lord considers his devotee greater than himself. In this connection, the scriptures provide an abundance of evidence. And then, this is another text from the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. He says, "O Uddhava, neither Brahma nor Shankara nor Sankarshan nor Lakshmi nor even my own self are as dear to me as you." Uddhava is a very intimate and faithful devotee of Lord Krishna. So again, he's stressing how intimate the relationship is, that even among the great demigods of the world, the devotee is more dear to Krishna. I'm just glancing at my watch here many times because I'm thinking that we should allow a little bit of time for some discussion or questions. So I think I'm going to stop. I had a couple of more similar verses to read, but they're of the same category, and I'd just like to ask you to put forward some opinions or ask some questions or make some objections or discuss any points that come to your mind. Any thoughts, they don't have to be relevant to this talk or this verse. So we have a few minutes to think about it. In a general way of speaking, acharya means teacher. It also signifies a person of extraordinary spiritual stature. Once Prabhupada was asked, "What is a leader?" And the answer given by one of his devotees was that a leader is the kind of person who acts in such a way that everyone will want to follow. So Prabhupada liked that answer. He said, "Can you say it again?" He said, "Yeah. The leader is the kind of person that acts in such a way that everyone wants to follow." Excuse me. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, that's very good. Very, very nice. Excellent example." So that's one of the meanings of an acharya. There's a lot of other words that mean similar things to an acharya. Acharya is not just someone who initiates people into spiritual life. But generally, when we speak of an acharya, we're also talking about a person who starts something fairly major, like Prabhupada. He's known as an acharya because he started a big movement that started as something very small and somewhat insignificant in India, and then it came to this country, and then it started to go all over Europe and Australasia and Asia, South America, and many, many places. So that's one of the ways that we determine what an acharya is. Someone who starts something that history proves to be a very major force in the history of the world. That's another meaning of acharya. And by teaching by example, that's something that can be expanded on a little bit. Once, this is another Prabhupada story, but it's a true story. He asked one devotee to clean the temple floor, and the next day he noticed that it wasn't properly done. So he said, "You didn't do this right. Do it like this." So he asked this devotee to hand him the scrub brush, and Prabhupada himself stepped down from his vyasasan and began to scrub the floor on hands and knees. And he said to him, "So do it like this. This is how you do it." And he showed. So this is one of the meanings of teaching by example. No matter how exalted one may be in some ways, that if there's a thing that needs to be done, it's taught by example. So there are different meanings of acharya. These are some of the things it means. Yeah. It's stated in the Bhagavad Gita that whatever we're meditating on the time of death will determine our future existence, and the one who's meditating on Lord Krishna will go to Krishna, will actually get perfection in life. So there's no mention of formalities there about initiation. And in our line of succession, many of the great acharyas were followers of a shiksha rather than a diksha guru. They weren't formally initiated by the person that they consider to be their main guru. And there are a lot of very apparently elevated people who, I shouldn't say apparently, but they are very elevated people who haven't undergone a kind of formal diksha or initiation process. Nonetheless, it's recommended that to make one's connection firm with the Lord, that one should undergo this process. But there are many arguments that show that the process of Krishna consciousness can be developed, and in some cases even perfected, without undergoing all that process. But it's recommended. It's because it makes one feel a bit more dedicated. It's not an easy life. Yes. Yeah. What's the it? I didn't hear the first part. Oh, yeah. Well, the ultimate measurer, of course, is God Himself. And we, as individuals, are not in a position to judge or measure anybody. We don't know who is going to be a guru, for example. There's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam that says, Pali Sheshu Dvishatsu Chat. Yet Karoti Samajima. We were discussing this the other day. Ishvara Tara Dineshu Palisheshu Dushatsucha. Prema Maitrekara Propekya. What this means is that one should see everyone as innocent. And in this way, one should worship the Lord, one should make friends with the devotees, but we should see that every person is. That there's a soul in every person, and that there is the Paramatma, or the Supreme Soul, in every person. So anyone who walks through that door, or any door, could be a very highly advanced spiritual person. Could be, sometimes I use the example, say, could be my child's or your child's guru. You don't know. You don't know what the karmic background of any person is. So we don't know, just by first glance at all, what the karmic background of any person might be. But then there are certain symptoms that show once one gets on the path to Krishna consciousness that, you know, there's certain qualities of tolerance, of simplicity, and so on, which are indications of one's advancement. But ultimately, the judge or the measure is the Supreme Lord Himself. I mean, He's the only person that really knows what's going on fully in another person's mind. You're welcome. Yes. How did Advaitacharya make Lord Chaitanya appear? Well, he was so powerful and so influential and so loved by the Lord that he wanted to see his devotee. He actually wanted to answer the call from his devotee. Just like if your father was very anxious to see you and you heard his voice, you know, after you were out playing, you'd probably come running. So they had that kind of an intimate relationship, that he actually heard the voice, he heard the plea, and there was a good reason for it, and that he had an intimate relationship. So Lord Chaitanya appeared very wonderfully on account of that affection. You're welcome. Another question? we have a tendency when things don't go right to say it's not, to not be responsible. It's not my fault, it's God's fault. And if therefore I don't like God, and if things are going right, there's a proverb to this effect. I think, well, I did this, I'm wonderful, I'm powerful, I'm great, I'm intelligent, and I was able to be successful. That's the unfortunate downside of human nature, that when people are in trouble, sometimes when they're really in trouble, like during World War II, the churches were filled with women who were praying for the return of their husbands, their sons, their brothers, and their fathers. As soon as they came back, if they came back, they didn't go back to church anymore. So this is part of the frailty of being in the flesh, of being in a human body. But one who enters into the path of devotion realizes that whatever is happening to me is happening by superior arrangement. And he takes even things that appear to be reverses to be impetuses to think, to meditate more deeply upon God, and to try to understand that there's a reason for this. If nothing else, it's to bring me closer through travail, through difficulties. And there's even devotees who pray for difficulties sometimes, to always pray to God for help, or to surrender, because they're in a kind of helpless condition. Asking that there's different relations we have with Krishna. We can have a conjugal relationship, we can have a servitor, a friendly relationship, we can have a neutral relationship, we can have different ways of relating to Krishna. And in our literature we read that the conjugal relationship, Madhurya Ras, is the highest Ras, higher than friendship, higher than servitude, higher than neutrality. But we also worship every day. We have a temple, we invite thousands of people to come in, because we understand that according to Bhagavad Gita that we are mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, that we're all parts of Krishna, and we have a relationship with him as a part or a servitor, as a servant. So when we offer Krishna nice articles and clothing and foodstuffs, we're doing it as his servants, because this is called sadhana bhakti. It's the way we practice being humble. It's the way we practice thinking that someone is greater than we are, and that is God, and that we are his servants. Not that we are his intimate lovers or his intimate friends, his intimate servants. These things are rasas, and we realize them in a purified condition. When our hearts and minds become very purified, then we can enter into our original pranali, or siddha pranali, our original relationship with Krishna. But as practitioners of bhakti yoga, we relate with Krishna as servants, as those who want to give him things, who want to see him as very great, greater than we are. And then by and by, as the practice is perfected, we come to eventually understand our swarupa, our original rasa with Krishna. But this main rasa is as servitors or servants of Krishna. She was asking if anyone called for Krishna, would he be as willing to come as he did for Dvaitacharya? And the answer is that Dvaitacharya is not an ordinary person. He's an incarnation of Mahavishnu, and extremely elevated according to what we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita and other books. So we follow a great soul like him in his footsteps, but we can't imitate him or expect that we're going to get the same kind of response. There are many other great souls who we read about, like Dhruva Maharaj, who underwent severe austerities as a young boy, about Prahlad Maharaj, about Judd Bharat, who are by nature, by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, very advanced. And their influence is much greater than ours. But everyone has the potential to be as elevated as any of those souls by practicing devotional service. So we understand from our reading. I was told that this was supposed to end at 7:15. Is something going wrong here? Okay, I better stop. Thank you very much. And we have a very nice feast in store after the chanting. So please join in. Hare Krishna.